When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Pop Culture Confidential, and I'm Christina Yerling-Biru. Hey everyone, welcome to Pop Culture Confidential with Awards Watch Chief Editor Eric Anderson. Yay!
Hello, hello, hello.
So you haven't visited with me for some time. What's wrong? You're under a conservatorship, right? I'm a bad influence.
Oh my God. Yes. Free Eric.
Blink yeah, if you need help.
I know. It's been a while. Well, you know, we had all of the festivals and one that's still underway now. So we've just kind of been each all over the world, you know, trying to get things covered and see things. So we are reuniting.
Yes, I'm so happy to see you. And I have a whole bunch of stuff I want to talk to you about. It's the endish of the festival season, not really, but it's mid-award season, the state of the industry. I want to talk about the Gyllenhaal siblings, who are just so hot. We need to talk about them. We have to talk about licorice and pizza and movies we love and hate and all kinds of stuff. So are you ready?
Ready.
So I want to start with a couple of things from this week. Some trailers dropped from incredibly awaited films. One is the Adam McKay film, Don't Look Up, with some big stars. We have DiCaprio, we have Jennifer Lawrence in it, we have Meryl Streep. Everyone's been waiting for this movie. And then the trailer dropped and everyone was like, what? Talk to me about this. What is this movie and what was the reaction?
You know, it's been pretty mixed, and that's kind of par for the course for Adam McKay. I don't think he has a movie that's really not been divisive as of late. I mean, just look at Vice itself, and it was extremely divisive. How many times can I say Vice in one sentence? but not for the Academy. The Academy went in all in for it. And now we have Don't Look Up, which is, by all accounts from what we've seen, including the clip piece that came out yesterday, it's high satire. Streep is playing a Trump-style female president. It looks like a lot. I mean, I don't have a lot of kind words for it myself, but there are a lot of people that really liked it. They thought it was really funny and that, you know, the editing was snappy. And that's great. And that's, like I said, that's par for the course for Adam McKay now, is creating these huge political satires that just are constantly trying to bend the rules of comedy and drama and where something fits in between, which I love. Conceptually, it's a great idea. I don't really have high hopes for the film though, especially at the clip that came out yesterday, which I thought was absolutely horrid.
There was something, I don't know how to say it, like uncanny valley-ish, but everyone looked really overly satirically made up. There was something about the look, the music felt like it was should have been in some other clip. I kept thinking something was wrong with what I was watching.
That's the weird thing, is that even people that like the clip are like, I hope this isn't the music. And you know, these are all everything that happened at the, I don't even know how you pronounce it, Tudum, the big giant, you know, Netflix live event, which was really fantastic and gave us so many first looks at so many things, you know, Bridgerton and Bruised, and I mean, so many things. So, you know, we're watching these and anticipating new bits and pieces of information and video and everything. And then this clip came, and it wasn't like it was, you know, a clip package from a whole bunch of scenes in the movie. This is one scene that was so weirdly edited and compiled and rushed. And I think that was the thing that threw some people off, is that, you know, even though McKay films have an enormous amount of editing, there is a symbiosis to it and a meaning to it. And this felt very erratic and just kind of all over the place. And that, like, that weird shot of Streep's fingernails. But to your point about how they looked, I was trying to figure out if this just looks like a oversaturated but flatly shot film, or if it did look kind of weirdly over the top.
It looked like, yeah, like a sitcom. And it looked like, well, the listeners go in and watch it, so, and then continue listening. But it looked like Jennifer Lawrence had her particular look in order to get a joke in about the dragon tattoo. It was like, that's why she looks like that. It was just too easy. You know what I mean?
And sometimes, I mean, anybody that has ever written something creatively, sometimes you get a bug in your head because you want a specific joke to land, even though it has nothing to do with anything else. And yeah, you'll like define an entire character or moment around being able to get this line. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, the way that it came out and was read, it could have been ad-libbed. It felt like a Jennifer Lawrence ad-lib with Jonah Hill. But we don't really know. But it sort of felt like that. That whole back and forth between them sort of felt like that, which I actually really hated. I thought her whole tampons in the purse thing was weirdly homophobic and just bizarre. I just don't know what's going on with this movie.
Well, we'll have to reconnect about this when we've seen it. But it was very odd. It was one of the odder trailers that's come out at the moment. And then there's another trailer which I haven't seen, because apparently it's only shown here and there, but it's my most anticipated movie of the year, and that's Paul Thomas Anderson's Licorice Pizza. I love this new name. What do we know about this trailer, and where is it being shown, and why can't I see it?
Well, the name refers to records being called Licorice Pizza. That was like a nickname, and there was a record store in Los Angeles in the 70s. So that's where that pulls from. I saw the trailer. I absolutely loved it.
Yes.
It is extremely Paul Thomas Anderson. It has elements of Lady Bird and Almost Famous and Boogie Nights. Oh. And it's funny as hell and super romantic. There's a scene that's pulled right out of real life, because there's a lot of elements of real Hollywood stories and life in this movie. But it's Bradley Cooper trying to explain how to pronounce Barbara Streisand's last name, which is pulled right from an interview that she did, doing that exact thing with an interviewer, where she spent like 3 minutes forcing him to say her name like over and over again. And it's absolutely hilarious.
And the reason that we can't see it is because it's only going ahead of a few movies at New York Film Festival, right?
No, it was playing in front of like movies at the New Beverly in Los Angeles. So that was like a week or two ago. So we're going to get something soon. I mean, it comes out Thanksgiving, so we're going to get something soon.
So you haven't seen the movie, but I mean, what are you thinking about? Could this be a Paul Thomas Anderson Oscar year?
Well, almost every year is for him, at least getting one. You know, it's almost like in this era of Paul Thomas Anderson, it's feast or famine. He's either going to get one or he's going to go all the way. And, you know, I was really pretty hesitant at first, early in predictions of just kind of what's going to happen with this and where is it going to go? Is it going to be Inherent Vice, you know, and get just a screenplay nomination, or is it more Phantom Thread? Is it Boogie Nights and just kind of somewhere in the middle? And I feel like the trailer makes the movie, and I'm going to only use this word once because it's already being overused for a dozen movies, but it feels pretty accessible. audience friendly, and
which Phantom Thread really wasn't.
No, not at all. I mean, the Academy still loved it, but it's not. Yeah, Phantom Thread was not your Sunday blue hair matinee movie. I think there's a lot of potential for Licorice Pizza if people can kind of get past the name, because I think that's going to throw people off in a lot.
But you think?
You know, well, I do, not necessarily in a negative way, but in an what the heck does this mean? Is it funny? Is it serious? What am I about to see?
And acting wise,
I think Bradley Cooper makes the most sense. He's heavily featured in the trailer, but I've also heard that it's a pretty small part. But you know, he's an 8-time nominee. Talk about, you know, it's something the Academy loves. They love him. And so I feel like that's a pretty safe bet. Cooper Hoffman, it's Philip Seymour Hoffman's son, is the lead. And we did finally in that trailer, you know, get an idea of what his performance is and what his acting is like. And it's sort of like, I guess I hate to make the comparison, but it's sort of like Michael Gandolfini, mm-hmm. where it's going to be really, really difficult to look past.
To not see their dads.
Yeah. Physically, just emotionally. But I really did like what I saw of him in it. It's very, I don't know, young guy coming of age kind of thing. I don't feel like he's going to, you know, be some kind of big awards magnet, but.
Oh, I can't wait for this one. Well, you were mentioning, yes, we've been gone. There's been a bunch of big festivals, Venice, you were in Telluride, New York. One of the things I'm really seeing coming out, there are so many stars this award season. Will Smith, George Clooney. Tell me a little bit about who you're seeing in award season for best actor and actress categories right now.
Well, I did just do, I'm going to pull them up now. I just did my acting predictions this last week. And you're right, it is a very star-studded season, and that's pretty clearly because so many big films, you know, were held off from 2020, and we got, you know, an Oscar season last year that was extremely indie. And I think that was always going to make the next year look pretty wildly different in comparison. But I'm not sure if it's that different, because when I look at like best actor of the big movies, like big studio movies, you know, we have Dune. I don't think Timothée Chalamet is going to make really much of a dent there. Adam Driver in House of Gucci, if that's a big movie, but I've kind of dropped him down my list. So what we have is, again, Bradley Cooper, big name, Benedict Cumberbatch in The Power of the Dog, and Denzel Washington in Tragedy of Macbeth just premiered. Raves, raves, raves. Totally expected. I don't think anybody's surprised by that.
That's Joel Coen, Frances McDormand, and Denzel Washington doing Shakespeare. I mean... just a gift to humanity.
Yes. Granted, Shakespeare adaptations do not do very well with the Oscars. And I think people might be pretty surprised by that, but they're not big winners there. But the big name and the big return and what is going to be one of the big movies is Will Smith and King Richard. And that had its world premiere at Telluride, which was a bit of a surprise to me anyway. It seems more like a Toronto movie. And Will Smith didn't even show up to Telluride, even though, like everybody else did for all of their movies. So that was a little odd. But he is now pretty much the favorite across the board to win. And,
so
you know, we're going to...
Just for those who don't know, he's playing the father of Venus and Serena Williams. So the tennis father, so to speak. And is it good?
I think it's a great movie. I was really impressed and surprised, to be honest. He's very good. He's very Will Smith. There's not, you know, he's got the sort of stardom where you're always going to see him. You're always going to know that it's Will Smith. Mm-hmm. Which is fine. That's okay. There's George Clooney has sort of the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like you can really love his performances, but it's always George Clooney in there.
It's always which is fine. Clooney and Quillet.
Yeah, which is fine. One of the things I really like about this category in this year is that, you know, if Will Smith and Denzel Washington are kind of like the number one and two battling it out, you know, we're looking at 2001.
Yes.
And that's kind of cool. That went really well for Washington at the time.
Yeah.
And not so much for Smith. And I think it switched this time.
You think so? So you have Will Smith at the top there.
Yes. I had had Denzel Washington, and this was, you know, before the festival started. But Will Smith was number two for months. And, you know, when you're doing predictions for things you haven't seen yet, everything is like, this is good on paper. We have to see what the response is, and we have to see how we feel about it. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't seen Macbeth yet, so I'm still pulling from reviews and notices and all of that, and I'll see it pretty soon. But having seen King Richard, I can see it just being such a juggernaut with the Academy, and one of those, what I felt like this year was going to be compared to next year, and that is the return of the studio movie. And I think that's what we're going to see.
How odd that he didn't come and promote it. Is there any explanation? Or,
you know, I didn't read too much into it. I don't know what else he's doing that would have kept him from it. And maybe I just was overlooking that. But yeah, it does seem odd because, I mean, everybody was there for their movies.
Yeah.
Everybody. But it is going to be at AFI in November, and he will 100% be there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's no way he won't. That's going to be a big event and a really big after party. And it's going to be all the major players will show up for it.
So what about the women? It seems like Kristen Stewart is just a lock after the reception, both in Venice and Telluride, for playing Diana Spencer in Spencer.
I don't know how she couldn't be. I don't know how anybody with worth their prediction weight in salt could not have her in the top spot right now. And it's the kind of thing, even outside of the performance in the film, it's the kind of thing where I think people really want to see that. They want to see somebody whose films and performances in the past have not been very well regarded until, you know, pretty recently, and largely with critics only. So there's an appeal to that. There's an appeal to this sort of working their way from this billion-dollar franchise to more nuts and bolts kind
from
of
Twilight
acting.
To
yeah
her film.
Absolutely. And she's really made that choice. So is Robert Pattinson. Mm-hmm. Made every possible choice to
except
be...
for Batman coming now.
Yeah, it's except for Batman. And it, I mean, something like that's
which
like
is just a small exception.
It's such a surprise, really, for him to do something like that. I mean, the only thing that would have been more surprising is like a, you know, a rom-com with Jennifer Lopez or something. But this, the Best Actress category is pretty fascinating. And for me, it's extremely fluid. I made some dramatic changes from last month because my top five were all biopics or, you know, actresses playing real people. Mm-hmm. And that just doesn't happen. I mean, three out of five nominees being real people is pretty common. Four out of five is extremely uncommon. I think it's happened once in the last 20 years. And five just seems like too risky a bet for me. Mm-hmm. So I moved a lot around, and I almost went on in the opposite direction because now my top five is all fictional characters except for Kristen Stewart. So, you know,
who's in your top five?
Kristen Stewart, Frances McDormand, Penelope Cruz, Cate Blanchett, and Olivia Colman.
Olivia Colman for
The Lost
Maggie,
Daughter.
Lost Daughter, Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yes, Cate Blanchett for Nightmare Alley, but that's still a category position that's up in the air. Penelope Cruz for Parallel Mothers. Frances McDormand tragedy Macbeth, which some people think is a category that's up in the air. I do not, but that's me.
I mean, she could definitely be nominated, but could she win 2 years in a row? Well, of course, Frances McDormand, she could, but.
She could. I mean, lots of things could happen, yeah. But again, to the Shakespeare point, the only time a actress has been nominated for Best Actress for a Shakespeare adaptation was 1936, and it was Myrna Loy.
That was a while ago.
That was a long time ago. That's a long time ago. So anything actually that happens with Macbeth that is above the line categories is going to be a big deal.
And supporting actor and actresses, that seems just crazy. There's so many choices. I was just thinking, and there's so many choices of what's come at these recent festivals, but I was just thinking about a movie I saw at Sundance and you saw too, that I thought, Mass, which was so incredible, which seems like there's four actors there who easily could be supporting actors. I don't even know who we're talking about right now in these categories.
Well, I mean, it was certainly a choice to put them all supporting, and there's another top film that might happen in. But it's all going to depend on how active each of these people are in the promotion of the film, and how active Bleecker Street, who's distributing Mass, wants to focus their campaign. And we've already honestly seen where that focus is. We're recording this on Sunday, the 26th. Mm-hmm. There are three Mass screenings in Los Angeles with Q&As, and they are only with Ann Dowd and Martha Plimpton right now. And yes, and there was one the other day that was just Ann Dowd. So to me, she is the main push. Anybody else kind of has to really get there on their own, but Ann Dowd is going to be the main push.
And then there's Kenneth Branagh's Belfast, which was a tremendous hit in Toronto, and which also seems like there could be a lot of actors in particularly supporting. Am I right?
So that is one of the categories that is up in the air right now, the placements, because there are some people that think that everyone's going to go supporting, or that they were told everyone's going to go supporting. I'm working purely with the knowledge of what my conversations were and what I was told. And that is that Dench and Kieran Hines are supporting, Katrina Balfe, Jamie Dornan, and the young Jude Hill would go lead. And that was to get kind of as many nominations as possible rather than risk, you know, only getting one in each supporting category. And it could go a lot of ways, because the kid really is the true lead. It is his story, which is the semi-autobiographical story of Kenneth Branagh. And it takes place in Ireland during the Troubles in 1969. And other than that, then Balfe has the biggest part, and she is, you know, she is borderline lead supporting. I have her in sixth place in lead. If she were to be officially supporting, I would probably put her at number one. Mm-hmm. And then Dornan, I feel like he's great in it. I love him in it, but he would be sort of like an easy sacrifice versus Kieran Hines, who I think would have a really good chance if he was on his own.
Now, Dornan plays Branagh's father.
Mm-hmm.
It was a historic year in terms of women winning directors at all these festivals, at Cannes, at Venice. It's just been an incredible year for it. Do you think that we will get another director in Oscar, a female director?
Well, I mean, I think obviously Jane Campion is getting in. There isn't a scenario in which she is not either number one or number two through the whole season, all the way up to Oscar night. So she's definitely getting in again. And that will then make history as the first woman to be nominated a second time. So that will be really great. I think we've got some potential, but as it happens almost, you know, every time that there are multiple women in contention, except for last year, which was an exceptional year, it's because we don't have any history to back up more than one woman getting in at a time, except for one year last season. What often ends up happening, whether it is, you know, awards groups or industry, is that they feel like they have to coalesce around one so that it ensures that
their heads don't explode.
Well, I mean, more so that they feel like that the focus can be on one so that it actually happens and that there isn't a whole lot of like choices that have to be made. I'm not going to say vote splitting because that's not what this is. But I mean, obviously Maggie Gyllenhaal is really high up there now with the Venice win and just Netflix backing.
I thought that was the lost daughter, Maggie Gyllenhaal's Elena Ferrante adaptation with Olivia Colman was one of my big favorites and surprises of Venice. I thought it was an incredible directorial debut. I so much want to see her nominated for this. She really deserves it. And for screenplay as well, which is what she won at Venice. But I just think it was so well directed. Do you think you'll see any others from that movie in Oscar?
Possibly. I really love the movie too. And I think Gyllenhaal is definitely getting in for screenplay. She should be pretty locked in for the DGA First Time Director nomination too. And that will, you know, continue to boost that profile. As far as other actors, I mean, obviously Olivia Colman as the lead is the most likely. After that, I would say Jessie Buckley, who plays the younger version of Colman. And I think she's outstanding. Her ability to kind of mimic certain characteristics and behaviors from Colman without it, you know, feeling weird and over the top was incredible. But I thought Dakota Johnson was great. It was one of my favorite things she's done.
It took me a while to even figure out that it was her. Surprisingly sort of disappears into this role, which is not a role you really would disappear into, but I thought she was so great.
She is great, and she has that, you know, dark wig and her skin is super sun-kissed tanned and dark makeup, and she just kind of is in there. I thought she was great.
Yeah, I thought she was. I hope that would be fun if she would get in there as well. And we have to see the Gyllenhaal siblings on the red carpets because the hotness of these two, right?
It's unbearable. What's going on with
Jake is just like,
oh my God, that pink sweater photo shoot. Absolutely. Just
this was GQ, right? One of the magazines.
Style. It was Style magazine. Oh my God. It was, I mean, I want all the outtakes. I want all of it. Bring it to me. And they were really great together at Venice because they were on the red carpet together. And I always love how they support each other. And it's fantastic.
You just want to see them everywhere. And I mean, not that I don't think The Guilty has his movie that he's promoting has any Oscar chances, right? I mean, even though it's probably not very good.
I loved it. I thought it was very good and he's great in it, but no, I'm not really looking for that to do anything.
Well, he better work supporting his sister then because we want to see him.
Yep. All over the place.
Now I want to talk to you about something that everyone hyped that we talked about so much last year. The musicals are coming. This is going to take the Oscars. And it just seems like all these huge musicals are not really going anywhere. Dear Evan Hansen just really got terrible critiques. We have
In the Heights earlier in the summer was a critical hit and a box office failure. And I mean, you can blame the pandemic if you want, but other films have been hit, so I wouldn't do that. Cinderella. it went right to Amazon. The less said about that disaster, the better. Everybody's talking about Jamie. Did have a small theatrical run and then hit Amazon. It's wonderful. It's lovely. But Amazon gave it basically no attention, certainly not the attention that they gave Cinderella. And it would have been beneficial if they had kind of swapped that. We might be, you know, talking about Richard E. Grant for, you know, a supporting actor nomination, because we talked about that last year, because
right,
that movie was supposed to come out last year, and he was certainly on the list as a contender. But I don't really think that's going to happen. Although there is an original song for it. There is an original song in Cinderella and Dear Evan Hansen as well, because all of these, you know, musicals that have existing music or are previously, you know, adapted, they all want to get the nomination because they can't get one for the existing song. So you get this brand new song thrown in there, which most of the time always feels completely superfluous and really just for getting that nomination. Les Mis did that and they got in. It's almost every musical adaptation now will have an original song so that they can kind of squeeze in one more.
And of course, the pièce de résistance here is that Spielberg's coming with West Side Story, which the trailer looks fantastic. And I mean, Spielberg is Spielberg, but the big question is sort of why? I mean, that I guess is the big question. How do you think that's going to go?
I feel like it's going to go pretty well. And it has obviously the best chance at being the most successful musical of the year. That's pretty much without question. And I think that was would have been anybody's belief at the beginning of the year too. I'm curious about it. The new trailer was really interesting because it almost made Tony seem like a cameo supporting player in this. And I think that's trying to do some very clever editing with Ansel Elgort and not focus on him as much as possible, which
Ansel
is,
Elgort,
you know,
has had some issues in
that he has for sure. And I think that's going to be something that will definitely come up when the press rounds come through, because it certainly hit In the Heights in a way that was not expected. Obviously different things, but there were, you know, issues of casting and colorism and things like that that hit In the Heights that I don't think they were expecting.
But Ansel Elgort wasn't even in the first trailer. They were really hiding him in the teaser.
Yeah, the teaser. Well, the teaser did a pretty good job of just kind of like compiling little bits and pieces, very little, almost no dialogue, and just giving you those familiar hints, because there's a lot of the film that looks, you know, directly exactly like the 1960s adaptation, even though this is supposed to be a different and new adaptation. It's not, you know, adapted from the movie, but the original musical. There's an updated book, which I think will have some different dialogue and some different lines, music lyrics too. So, and those are all been approved by Sondheim. And so we'll see how it goes.
And talking about sort of PR that'll be coming down the line or press, Frances McDormand and Joel Coen were asked a little bit about, you know, their many years work with Scott Rudin, who's mm-hmm. been accused of bullying and is, you know, basically is out of the picture. Do you think that that's going to follow them around as they talk about Macbeth?
I think maybe, but considering how they answered that question, especially...
How did
McDormand,
they answer?
It was really bristly. Honestly, I thought it was kind of funny. And, you know, that is not to diminish Scott Rudin's behavior in any way. But she was not here for that. And she was like, next question, are we talking about the movie? What is this interview? Keep moving on. It was a pretty bad interview overall, and less them and more the interviewer's approach. It was just really kind of weird. But I don't think that they're going to go into any type of depth whatsoever. And they will try and just kind of squash it and not talk about it and want to move on. I mean, I could see Frances McDormand getting up from an interview and leaving if somebody keeps trying to push it.
And how are they going to deal with Ansel? West Side Story? I mean, did you interviews or what do you think?
I don't think that he's going to show up too much. And in that case, it kind of sucks because then the press will put it on all of the co-stars and everybody else around them. And it will be up to them to kind of answer and field questions that are not really their responsibility. I'm not sure. I don't know. It could be just a big nothing burger and mm-hmm. nobody asks anything at all. But I do think that press is getting a little more feisty with their interviews. And I think it could show up in conversations, whether it's, you know, on the red carpet or like an in-depth interview. But I can't say, I'm not sure.
And another sort of category this year is sort of camp or camp adjacent type movies. I mean, we're talking both the trailer for House of Gucci with those wonderful accents, which I'm very much looking forward to. I mean, Jessica Chastain and the whole sort of look and feel of The Eyes of Tammy Faye. Now, I really like this genre, if we can call it that. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit, how do you think people are going to go for these movies and Jessica Chastain in particular?
Well, I love Chastain in Tammy Faye, and I thought the movie was fantastic. I think people have audiences and viewers and even journalists and critics have kind of a weird relationship with accents and actors. And it can be very, I don't want to say classist, but a little bit. Like if, you know, an American actor does a really lovely British accent, then it's, you know, an elevated performance and they think really highly of them. Mm-hmm. And then you have somebody like Chastain or even like McDormand in Fargo do this upper Northeast US Minnesota type of accent. And it's so easy to, if you come from the coasts or whatever, to kind of mock it, to see it and hear it as mockery, which really means you think that people that actually speak like that are to be mocked. And that happens with Southern accents too. And we note accents like that as being less intelligent, and it's just something that happens. It shouldn't, but it is. And so I just think there's a weird relationship that audiences have when actors do specific accents. And I think that's how something like Chastain's is camp adjacent. It, even if she sounds like her and she has so much of the cadence of Tammy Faye, which is pretty spectacular. And I do think that it's an outstanding performance. I absolutely love her in it. But I wonder how that will be read. If it'll be read like, you know, a serious actress doing something seriously or campy.
Mm-hmm. If you compare her chances to Kristen Stewart as Diana.
Well, that's kind of what I mean right there. You've got somebody doing this posh Diana accent, and that automatically elevates her as a performer because of the accent more than you would with somebody, like I said, from the South or North of United States. So yeah. And then you go over to Lady Gaga and everybody in House of Gucci.
Yeah, that's not
and it is. It's like, is she Russian? And what does she sound like? Yeah, and I'm like, have you like heard Patricia speak? Because that's what she sounds like. And her voice and her accent changed throughout.
Yeah. This is the decades a different anyway. Thing, because this is speaking English, is Italian. I mean, this is not even an accent that really exists.
Exactly. That is a whole nother thing with movies too, is when you have, and this is at the beginning of time, when you have actors doing, English language, you know, speaking of accents and places where they would not be speaking English. Yeah. So it's always weird. So
we're pretending to speak Italian. So exactly. But we're speaking English or something.
And it's even more weird and wacky when you know, a director chooses to stage a scene where you have people, say, speaking with Italian accents, but in English, and then you have other characters speaking in Italian. Sometimes there is a, again, sort of like a class issue. This is so funny that I'm thinking about this right now. We just did a rewatch of the HBO series Rome a few weeks ago, and there is a very clear separation of how we are supposed to understand characters, because all of the main characters are Italian, but they speak with English accents, like pure just British accents all the way. The servants and people less than them speak English, but with Italian accents.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And there is no other way to read that other than class. I think that sometimes, again, this is shorthand that a movie has to use for an audience so that you don't, you know, have to overly explain something. But at the same time, it's kind of insidious too.
It is.
That it happens.
It's become like this unwritten communication between the audience and the movie makers that's really should, we really should be changing this around.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to just end up our talk here today and ask you about what your personal favorites have been during this festival season, and also your big, if you have any big disappointments that, you know, we've been talking about this past year and that you finally got to see.
Let me see. Well, I loved Power of the Dog. Oh, loved it. And I, one of the things that, you know, people I didn't mention from that is actually Cody Smith McPhee, who is so good, and what a neat breakthrough for somebody that's, you know, still been working for a decade or something. But
he's amazing. He plays Kirsten Dunst's son.
Yes. And oh my God, he's just really good.
It's just a role with so many levels, and you don't know where you have him, and all of a sudden it just switches, and oh, it's so good.
I think Mass is one of the best films of the year. I think it is perfectly performed, and I think the screenplay is absolutely among the best of the year. I loved The Humans. I did not see the play, so my experience with it is completely the film, but I thought it was extremely cinematic. It was absolutely like a horror movie.
This is interesting. Say the plot of that just briefly.
So it's Richard Jenkins and Beanie Feldstein and Steven Yeun and Amy Schumer and June Squibb and Jane Houdyshell, who's the only person from the play to be in the film. And so they're moving, Beanie Feldstein and Steven Yeun are moving to this apartment in New York City, and they're sort of just getting furniture in there, and the family's all there together. So it becomes this, here's a whole bunch of big secrets and truths that are going to happen. And there is a, they treat the house almost like this other character. It's breathing. It's like quite literally breathing. There are like big, like air and water pockets in the walls, and it looks just, it's extremely run down, but they move, and there is just, it's very creepy. It's wonderful. I thought it was outstanding. I think cinematography is amazing in it. I really loved Belfast, like loved it. I'm a big fan. Spencer, I could talk about Spencer forever, and I could talk about it in the most grounded way that I can, or the most hyperbolic way that I can, because I do think that Stewart gives one of my favorite performances of all time. Like all time.
Wow.
You just you hit the right note of person and performer, of director and actor, where it would never be anything else again. I thought she was
stunning. She's amazing too. I have a little bit of more issues with the movie itself, but she is not one of them. She's just fantastic.
God, what else did I like? Let's see. I mean, there's still some fun stuff that I haven't seen. I really liked Cyrano a lot. I thought it was really good. And I want Peter Dinklage to get nominated. I loved Eyes of Tammy Faye. I really liked King Richard. What else do we have? Let's see. Look at you, Judi Dench. Passing, which is going to have a new cut at New York Film Festival. So I'm anxious to see that again.
Oh, really? A new cut? Because I saw that at Sundance. Changing it? Oh,
really? Yes, I did too, but there will be a new cut. So I'll have to see if my eyes are strong enough to spot the differences. I loved Come On, Come On. Oh, I thought that was wonderful.
That's Mike Mills' new movie with Joaquin Phoenix.
Yes, and Gabby Hoffman, who's wonderful. And that kid is amazing. Oh my God, that kid's crazy. Precocious kids are like, you love them or hate them in movies, you know? It's like, no kid talks like that. It's like, that's okay. It's a movie.
We love this one. He can talk how he wants.
It totally. I love him. I think he's great. I really love Coda. I think Coda is.
I love Coda too.
Coda is a great example of, and I know it's a French adaptation, but it's a great example of taking, I mean, really a very, very basic cliched story. And it is to its core, but it's so well done. It's beautifully shot. It's perfectly acted. And it's a unique version of this classic and cliched story of, you know, girl that wants to get.
Yeah, if a classic and cliched story works and you're crying half the way through, then it's good.
If it works, it works. You can all, I mean, you know, the Shakespeare thing, there's only 7 stories in the world. This is one of those stories. And it's, you know, it's a girl with a great talent that wants to get away from her small town and can't because her family keeps her there. And we've seen it 1,000 times. But if it's good, it's good.
What about disappointments? Anything you've seen so far that...
You know, ultimately, like we were talking about before, it's been the musicals that have been disappointing so far. I did like... Everybody's talking about Jamie. I thought it was pretty wonderful. I was not that impressed with In the Heights at all. I think Cinderella is... one of the worst movies of the year. It's horrifically bad. I think Dear Evan Hansen is an absolute nightmare of a movie. Like bad dream, paralysis, demon nightmare. I absolutely can't stand it.
Oh, and it just seems like they've made so many fundamental mistakes and it doesn't work in 2021. The whole sort of idea of the movie, there's so many levels that it seems to be a mistake.
There's also
and the fact that he's 27 and he's playing a teenager. I mean, that's just one of the things that makes it bad, but also the story itself feels so.
There's often a strange translation between, you know, something that's had success on Broadway, to feature film. I think it was one of the things that hurt In the Heights is that it's not a musical where everybody knows the songs and you kind of go into it doing that and wanting to sing along. I think Dear Evan Hansen has more of that, but clearly not enough because it was did pretty poorly at the box office this weekend as well. I think something like West Side Story is that kind of musical where you know these songs and everybody for the last 50 years has. So it has a familiarity. Oh,
I can do the snaps. There. I know every.
Yeah, exactly. So if something like West Side Story can't be a success and a pretty big one, then it's almost like what possibly can? Because we've got Wicked coming down the line. Like next year. So how's that going to turn out if we've had a year full of huge musical flops?
Yeah.
And there's Tick Tick Boom coming. We did not mention that. Tick Tick Boom, which is also going to be at AFI, and that is Andrew Garfield. It's Lin-Manuel Miranda's directorial debut. And that, to me, feels like it's going to fall into that same category where it's about the guy that created Rent, but it's like, who knows the songs in this?
Nobody knows. No one can sing along.
Yeah. So I think it's that too. So I think that's always going to be a struggle. And speaking of Rent, when that movie adaptation came out, that was a big flop too. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult. I think there's almost a better chance for original musicals than there are adaptations now, unless you're like a Chicago, but you know, that could have been a flop too,
yeah.
But it wasn't.
But the original musicals, as you were saying, then no one knows the songs and then they flop for that reason.
I think that is the bigger reason is just the lack of familiarity. And also too, it's not, you can't put the blame on the film. You have to put the blame too on the audience for having a lack of adventurousness to go and see it and to be like, oh, I really like this musical. I'm going to go and get the soundtrack now. And I'm going to, you know, watch videos on YouTube of it or something like that. You have to have an adventurous audience too, not just an adventurous movie.
It's a really difficult genre at the moment. I mean, I think it seems like almost like when a TV series does a musical bottle episode, that goes really well because it's a fun little short thing, but it's hard. It feels like it's James Corden is still the last bastion of.
Oh my God. I mean, if there is like one, if I had to focus on one thing that has ruined the movie musical, it is absolutely right? James Corden. And if he's in Wicked, forget it. Flop. Done. Yeah, we didn't even talk about Cats last year.
No, we're going to
Speaking of musical flops of one of the biggest, you know, musicals of all time. Phantom of the Opera 2. Phantom of the Opera. Biggest musical of all time. Everybody in the damn world has seen it from all over the place. Flop. People just don't care.
Well, Eric, this is always so much fun to talk to you. And I hope we're going to, let's talk after Licorice Pizza.
Yes.
And let's talk about it a lot.
Yes. Which, you know, I think it's November 24th or something like that. There's a lot of things coming out at Thanksgiving. So we'll get something on it soon and we'll see it soon. We're already at the end of September. So.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to talk to you again and follow up. Let's not take as much time as we did this time around. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey there. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema.
Our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.